Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Lorenzo on the left side.
Yes, I said I'd get upgraded, and here we are at the behest of Torgrud, though I'm sad. But yeah, nice to be back, guys.
I've been bamboozled here. Wow. I moved myself because I didn't like how the camera was because I'm a prima donna, and now I'm being demoted. I see how it is. But I'm here, and I'll be editing, and I'll be creating the thumbnail, but, you know, we'll have it up. It'll be a fun one, so don't worry.
If you appreciate AJ's thumbnails, then drop a comment, because I am in awe of some of the stuff that he comes up with each week. So, yeah, I give you full props for that, and it's just a temporary lineup change. I mean, we could say that this might be your last appearance for a while, Lorenzo, which I'm sure everyone will be sad about.
But incredibly sad.
The Christmas quiz is coming back.
So yes, yeah, I'll be doing that again. So I'm looking forward to that. So
I can't wait for that. That's the highlight of the podcast year. That and looking back at predictions where we've massively fucked it. Before we dive into this week's episode, and it's a busy one, we've got three games to talk about. Thank you to everybody. As always, our Substack founding members, Des Windsor-McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mac, Maurice Polman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ, and Matt, for supporting what we do over on the Substack. We had something really good and really useful, in my opinion, out in the last week. Isaac, who is in charge of the content over there, did a breakdown of the 2022-23 accounts. Everybody knows we got a 6 mil profit. Everybody knows that we hit record revenues as a club. But how did we do it? What are the key numbers? What are the trends that we're looking at for the future? He broke it all down and picked out the stuff you need to know. And as mentioned before, if you're not a subscriber already, you can try 7 days for free. So you'll see a few of the things that we put out on a weekly basis, and you can decide if you want to become a paid member. And yeah, thank you to everybody who has so far. We begin this week's episode with a Champions League recap in the City of Romance, and it was not very romantic for us.
I don't even know how to start with this. It was just a really poor display, let's be honest. I think the worst game we had in the Champions League, not just because obviously we lost 3-0, but we didn't even put up a fight. We just let them at us the whole 90 minutes. I was expecting a little bit more, especially because there's a lot of build-up. We knew how important this game was, and we just fell flat, just completely flat. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. There's no bite. Yeah, with PSG, it is worth noting that they are a yo-yo team. You don't know who's going to turn up. I think the 3-1, it was 3, no, 4-1, wasn't it? 4-1 against Newcastle?
Mm-hmm, 4-1. Yeah.
That's, I think, quite flattering to Newcastle in fairness, but still, that team wasn't very good, the way they sort of set up and the rest of it. But again, you play PSG on a Monday and you'll beat them. You play PSG on a Tuesday and they beat you. That's kind of the team that they're like. And unfortunately, we got the wrong end, and Mbappe did Mbappe things as well. So yeah, bad showing.
I think we were kind of like, there was a mixture of opinion on last week's episode about how we'd fare in this game. I was the most pessimistic. I just thought, I've actually looked at PSG's team, and there's an awful lot of quality there that can hurt us in areas where we're not particularly good, i.e. the wings. And I actually thought, and you might disagree, I thought for 20-25 minutes, this was actually a good contest. The opening 20-25 minutes, we were getting stuck in. We were winning balls back. We squandered a couple of opportunities on the counter with our own wastefulness. And PSG's first goal, the Mbappe goal, which comes, as Lorenzo says, from Mbappe doing Mbappe things, was their first opportunity in the game, their first big opportunity. They took theirs. We did not. And that is the difference between, obviously, a world-class player, but also, I think, a side that are potentially going to go on and win this group. AJ, thoughts? Bit of balance? Or did you think we just got dicked?
Well, it's going to be contradictory here, but I think both.
Yeah.
I don't think we actually were that bad prior to the goal. Granted, that was only 30 minutes, you know, half hour of the game, but it was fairly even. Even at the end of the game on the stat sheet, most of the stats were pretty close. PSG obviously took the edge in everything, and especially so in goals scored, the one that matters. But, you know, it really was a fairly good fight up until Mbappe scored his goal. And then we went into halftime. And I don't know what the team talk was, but I think it was, hey, we need a win here. Let's push for it. Let's go for this. Let's make something happen here. And at halftime, I believe Malik Chow was subbed off, which was already, I know he was on an early yellow card, a very early yellow card, but he was already going to serve a suspension against Juventus. So I feel like you let him play. But regardless, he comes off. You bring on Kjær, who's looks slower than Chow, who's already a fairly slow defender and overall isn't that much better. In fact, he's probably worse. Let's be real, but he's not a terrible player. He's just, he's a couple rungs lower. And then we went for it. And when you push forward against a very attack heavy side, you're going to be susceptible to counterattacks. And we were, and that's kind of what happened. So I think 3-0 is fair to PSG, but I don't think it's fair to us in a way. I don't know if that really makes sense or if that's even possible, but I don't know. I feel like the scoreline doesn't tell the full story here. And it was one of those things where we could have set back and defended and just lost 1-0 and hoped for a counter that was never going to come. Or we could have done what we did, which was try and go forward. And I guess we still didn't create a whole lot of chances. I think the shots-wise, we only had 2 less than PSG. Only 3 less on target. So it's not like there was a whole lot of parity there. It was just our shots were pretty weak and they were right at GGO. And their shots were strong and in spots that were harder to save. So I don't know. I mean, they obviously were the better team on the day and probably overall, but it's not the end of the world to me. We still got 3 more games.
We do, yeah. And also Dortmund winning at Newcastle.
Lifeline.
Has compacted the group once again. Mm. There's only 4 points separating bottom from top. Now, obviously, we will feel like we've got a mountain to climb because we've not only failed to win in our first 3 games, but we've failed to score a goal. And you're not going to go very far doing that. But as we found out, I think, in our first season back when we played Liverpool, Atletico Madrid, Porto, you can win the penultimate game. And because everybody's beating each other, you still have a chance to go through. However, we're now heading into those last 3 games needing at least 6, potentially 7 points in order to go through, which will be a tall order. But yes, I think the problem with the game like this, it's not necessarily that it's away from home. It's just when you look at it as a tactical matchup thing, you've got Luis Enrique, who is PSG's head coach, has been since the summer. He plays a very possession-oriented style of football. So I think that we thought we'd probably be chasing the ball around from minute one. And that actually would probably play into our hands a little bit because they'd have to commit bodies and we'd potentially be able to spring them on the counter. The problem was with those first 20-25 minutes is that I think we grew in confidence a little bit too much and then we were the ones who were overcommitting the bodies. Calabria came out after the game. Funnily enough, he was the one who came on at half time at right back and then switched inside. So it wasn't him who was on for the Mbappe goal. But he was saying, I can't believe it's happened again that we've left 1v1s, you know, at the back. So I think he knew the naivety of the performance, in particular the first goal, because it was when that first goal went in that the result was already decided. Now, people will point at PSG this weekend and say, well, they were 2-0 up against Stade Brestois and Stade Brestois came back to 2-2. They ended up losing 3-2, but it shows that they are, as Lorenzo said, they can be mentally fragile. And yet it never really looked like we were going to get back into the game. And by the end, and I know what you're saying, AJ, where like you look at the stats and you think about the actual periods of pressure and it doesn't feel like we were overwhelmed at any point. But when they were coming wave after wave on the counter at the end, it was like, I just want this over and done with. We get it. You're better. You can take your chances. You can score more goals than us. Thanks. We'll leave now. You know, it wasn't nice. It wasn't pretty. But also it's a situation that manifested because we found ourselves a goal down to a goal that I'm not going to say it was entirely avoidable because Mbappe is Mbappe and it is hard for anybody to defend one-on-one against him. But Tomori was kind of chopping and changing all over the place a little bit before he hit that shot.
I don't even blame Tomori for that, though. No, I think Tomori did what a normal defender is going to do in that situation, right? Like, it's if Mbappe is doing all these crazy cutbacks there and you're in the box, like, you can't just go through his legs and just, you know, say, fuck it, take the card. You give away a penalty if you do that. So I think he actually made the right call for when he went down for his challenge. It's just, as Lorenzo said, Mbappe doing Mbappe things. Like, yeah, the guy scored a hat trick in the World Cup final. You know, I'm not going to.
He's got so many ways
to say there's something else that could have been done, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, he's the ultimate, like, he's a threat from every point of view, because just when you think you've done something good, obviously you show him inside and he's got the ball on his favoured shooting right foot. But then just when you think, okay, it's going to force him to curl one into the far corner at the very least, Maignan might be, he just drills it straight through and in the bottom corner at the near post, and Maignan was wrong-footed because he wasn't expecting him to go that side. And it's like, yeah, this guy can hurt you in so many ways. And I'm not going to go so far as to say anything wanky, like, oh, it was a privilege to see a player of that level. But sometimes you do just watch players like that, and everything in the build-up to the game was like, oh, Liao, a chance to raise his game against Mbappe. And it's like, what are we fucking talking about here? There's so much between the two of them.
Speaking of what you just said there, you know, Mbappe, obviously my girlfriend's a school teacher. She works during Champions League games. She doesn't watch them, but I'm texting her about it. I'm like, yeah, we're playing PSG, and Mbappe just scored. And she's like, oh, I'd like to watch Mbappe again. And I was like, shut your goddamn mouth. No, you don't. Not right now. I don't ever want to see this guy play.
Everyone does. He's amazing. I think there's something interesting about this. Go on.
I was just going to say about that goal, the thing I really want to point out is not so much Mbappe and not so much Tomori, but Reinders. He, just fluffs in a big game. And we'll get more to that in the Napoli game, because there's a lot to talk about him there as well. But if you rewatch that goal, specifically the Mbappe one, Reinders gets completely beat by a 17-year-old in midfield. He even goes for a bear hug around him and then, like, just can't even close that out. And he's like trotting all goofy like, because he just gets beat completely. And the difference between the 17-year-old, whose name I don't even remember, someone with a Z.
Zaire Emery.
Okay, Zaire Emery. And Reinders, who's supposed to be, you know, at the height of his career, entering his prime years, is Zaire Emery was alone on the edge of the box towards the center. And he chose to make the smarter play, passing to Mbappe out wide. Reinders will not make that fucking pass. He will cut inside and say, I'll take the shot. And then, you know, Rosette. But that's not the criticism of this time. It's that he was beat in midfield, and that's what created this goal. And really, that was the story of this whole match, was their midfield was just running laps around us. We couldn't do anything in midfield. And I think we're not remembering that we have not once seen our best midfield trio this season. Bennacer has not played a single game this season. He's our best midfielder. Loftus-Cheek's been out for over a month. He's the most physical guy that we have in our midfield, and it showed. And I would say Musa is definitely taking that third spot over Reinders, I think. I think he's really developed well. But we haven't got to see those three play together, and I don't know how it'll turn out, obviously. But what we're seeing in midfield has been a hodgepodge of new guys every single week. We haven't seen, you know, what we can really do with this squad yet in midfield. And when the people we bring on are Adli, Krunic, or Pobega, one of those three, it's a drop in quality still. We don't have any substitutes that are going to keep us where we're at or elevate us like other teams. Like Napoli at the weekend, everyone they brought on improved their attacking output, whereas everything we brought on hurt us. So it's just one of those things. Again, depth. We signed a ton of players, and unfortunately, a ton of players are hurt again.
We can't deserve something. I mean, yeah.
No, I can't agree with that more. I just wanted to add, like, before we move off from Champions League, something that I think isn't just isolated to Champions League games. I think it's obviously relevant to the Serie A games, but it's been very apparent in the three games we've played so far. We have had passages of fantastic play. We've had minutes of fantastic play. We've had the second half against Dortmund, brilliant. You could argue the whole game against Newcastle, except for the most important thing, brilliant. And like you said, Ollie, although I do think we got dicked by PSG, we did have 20, 25 minutes where we were not just good, but arguably the better team. But how come we've only got like 2 points out of that? That's the biggest issue. Like, we have played well in isolation. You can take out these moments. You can take out, you can see what Pioli's doing. Yeah, we've been unlucky with injuries, but even with the players that replace them, they've played well enough. But we can't win games. Mm-hmm. If you can't win football games, it does not matter how well things are kind of progress. And that's a wider issue, but I just think it's more apparent in the Champions League, because I don't think we've been outplayed at all. I don't think we were outplayed by PSG, really, if you look at it at sort of a macular level. But we just can't win. And in the Champions League, we can't even score a goal.
Kat sees those moments when we're on top. And other
was
teams...
it the PSG game or the Juventus one prior, where right after halftime, Pulisic missed his shot, or that he was crossing it to Giroud or something like that, and he should have taken a shot? I can't remember which game that was. Was that the PSG game?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Yeah, it was on the right side of the box, and he decided to try and play it across. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if that goes in, how much of a different game is it, you know? Because we missed that, so then we're still pushing forward, and now we're leaving ourselves exposed 1v1s. If that goes in, game resets. We settle down. They settle down, you know? Who knows?
They maybe
I'm blaming Pulisic at all, by the way. You know, it's a game of inches sometimes, and... unfortunately, they had the three right inches where we didn't. So
we're missing the most important part. You know, we're missing. It's like running a race and being amazing, but then at the last hurdle, you just get a cramp every single time. It doesn't matter how good you ran those 75 meters. It's the last 25 that count.
Yeah.
That's what we're lacking.
Yeah, absolutely. There was something interesting before the game that a L'Equipe journalist said, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he said, in an interview with Milan News, and I don't know if it was meant to be provocative or if it was a genuine belief from him, but he said that only 3 to 4 Milan players would get in PSG's squad and not all of them would start. So, of course, that drew the ire of some fans who were like, the arrogance of this lot. But then you look at the teams and I don't think he's far off, you know. I know it might have been a little bit disrespectful and, as I say, provocative, but I think... just based on the starting lineup that they had, and it was matched up in a 4-3-3, I'm still taking Maignan over Donnarumma. So I think that's the one he conceded as well and said, yeah, that's fine. The other one he said, funnily enough, was Reinders. He said, I really like Reinders, and I think he could slot into the midfield three. But that back four, Hakimi, Marquinhos, Skriniar, Lucas Hernandez, is world-class. It's a world-class back four. I'm having all of them, you know.
You're taking Lucas over Teo?
Yeah, this season, Teo's been...
this season,
you
know? I'm probably...
and also, you've got to remember, like, Nuno Mendes is their usual starting left-back, and Lucas Hernandez has been slotting in at left-side as centre-back, but Mendes is injured, you know? Midfield three, Zaire Emery looks like an incredible talent at 17, as in, like, he already looks ready for the biggest stage, whereas...
yeah, we've still got 24-year-old Reinders, like you said,
Tugger. I mean, two assists. I mean,
yeah, we've got some players that we think are, like, talents to polish. That's a guy who, like, he's not even drinking age and he is dominating games on this stage. Like,
wait till he gets to drinking age, maybe he won't be dominating.
Ugarte, I mean, yeah, Ugarte, like, Isaac said, and I'm going to expose him here, he said before the game, I don't even know who that guy is. And I was like,
which is crazy. We were linked with him.
He cost 60 million from Sporting and he was wanted by a load of clubs like Bayern, Premier League teams. He chose to go to PSG, fair enough. He was outstanding. He's so good. He would be a perfect six for us. He keeps it tidy. He breaks play up. And he's very good with the long ball as well. Vitinha, I guess, is the one that the guy was saying maybe you could swap in for somebody of ours. But then the front three that started, Dembele, Kolar Muani and Mbappe. You could maybe make an argument for Pulisic over Dembele this season because Dembele is yet to actually score for PSG. And he had a disallowed goal. But Kolar Muani, the one that got away for us, obviously we chose to sign Origi instead, famously. And Mbappe, I mean, yeah, that's him. And the substitutes that they brought on, I mean, we brought on Calabria, shifted Kalulu inside centre-back, Adli, Pobega, Simon Kier. They brought on Fabian Ruiz, who would start for us all day, without a doubt. Lee Kang-in, who scored the third goal, and actually he looks a real talent.
Great.
Well. He's also a teenager.
Yeah.
Gonçalo Ramos, another big investment 22. To sign from Benfica. And I actually like Nordi Mukiele as well. he came on for Hakimi. So just across the board, they do have a better, deeper squad with match winners and finishers. And when we were coming into this game, having been rocked a little bit by that Juve game and without having Son, it just seemed to be a step, another step too far for this squad. But I, for once, will credit the opponent and say PSG played a very, very solid game there. You know, they took us on and took us apart exactly the way that any team should. Let's do tops and flops. Tops is a tough one, really. I'm going to say that it could be Maignan, actually, because he made a couple of saves to stop it being embarrassing. I can't even remember. Tomori. I don't hold him particularly responsible for that first goal. He got left in isolation, and Mbappe will do that to a lot of better centre-backs than him. But I seem to remember many times he was the one that was keeping the back four together. I'll go with him, but I've had a brain fade.
Yeah, it's tough to pick a top in a game where you look at it, okay, none of the attackers scored, so none of them did their job. Okay, the midfield was outmatched by the entire opposition midfield at every step of the way. Okay, the defense let in three goals. Okay, the goalkeeper let in three goals. Like, it's really hard to pick someone.
Mm.
But I am inclined to probably go Maignan. I think the amount of saves he made and the caliber of saves he made, far more impressive than Donnarumma. You know, I just think he had to face Mbappe. He had to face one-on-ones against Kulmani and Lee. And I think what he did was more impressive, even though he let in, obviously, three goals. In fact, I don't even want to pick him anymore just because it feels wrong to say that.
Maybe there wasn't.
Can I just not pick a top?
Yeah, that's fine. Move on.
Yeah, fuck.
I do have a top, but it's a bit of a weird one. Mainly because of just there's... I'm not either way of this narrative. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, but I'm actually going to pick Calabria just because I know he played 45 minutes. So fair enough, he didn't play a full game. But there are certain matches where you think, yeah, he's shit. Like, you know, he's out of bed. We will complain about him. How is he our captain? Blah, 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 blah. But you compare Calabria and you compare Teo this season specifically, he's been pretty damn good. He didn't really do a lot wrong in the 45 minutes he had. Again, 45 minutes, I appreciate. But it was against, you know, Mbappe and lots of other players. And I thought he did all right. And I think he did very well in the Napoli game. We'll get on to later. And I just think, yeah, I think he gets a lot of bad credit. So he wasn't really a top, but I just respect his performances and as a captain. So that's why I'm picking him. Just
yeah. Fair play. Yeah, good pick. Flop is between two for me. I think it was another big game ghost from Liao, unfortunately, and his performances have actually increased in frustration for me. Like, it's getting indefensible now, but I'm gonna go with Krunic. I think he was the one who looked so far out of his depth. I get it, PSG play with speed and precision, and we never do the two at the same time, you know, by comparison, but when you're the one that's protecting the back four and the back four has no protection, you've done something wrong, unfortunately. Now, I know the two midfielders either side of him have got something to answer for there as well. You can say about the wingers not tracking back. You can say about our general defensive shape being all over the place. But even when he was on the ball, he was sloppy with his passing. That first 20, 25 minutes, when the game was perhaps a bit more balanced, it was chaotic because nobody would take it by the scruff of the neck. And it was just a wasted opportunity, I think, for Krunic coming back from injury to start a game and be like, yeah, this is my spot. Adli came on by comparison and looked a lot brighter.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Reinders. I'm just getting really sick of him. It might not even be accurate for this match, but I'm just getting sick of him, man. I'm seeing the same thing every single game. Same poor decisions. Same bad defending. It's just everything he's doing. And I almost feel like it's intentional just so Pioli doesn't play him as a six. I was like, we get it, dude. It's not going to happen anymore. But if you keep it up, he's not going to play you at all. And it's driving me crazy. So, yeah, Reinders is taking my flop for the foreseeable future, I think.
Yeah, I want to double down on Krunic because he's just not good enough. But I'll pick Leao to be different, like you were kind of alluding to, Ollie. It is getting a bit too much now. You know, we get it. You're our best player, but like start acting like it, to be honest with you, mate. You're fantastic. We love you. We want you to stay forever. But, like, you need to be doing a bit better. You need to be. This is a game where all eyes are on you. The whole PSG versus Mbappe versus Leao narrative was ridiculous. You know, we're talking one of the best, if not the best player. Okay, Bellingham right now probably is, but he's top three and has been for a while in the world. Leao's not at that level. But at least, like, okay, we'll talk about it in an Napoli game. He did do this, but put more effort in. Track back, run more. Again, we'll talk about it. He did do it in Napoli, but do that in the biggest stage. You need to be doing that every single game. Every game. So, yeah, not good enough.
Yep, yep. We move on from Paris to Naples. The week of fire comes to a close. The tricky trio of games, the Juve, PSG, Napoli trifecta, ended with a game on Sunday night at the Diego Armando Maradona. Football is often cliche referred to as a game of two halves. This very much fit that narrative. Just to quickly summarise, I suppose, Giroud has still got Napoli on a leash, which is good, and Rahmani, for that matter. He ended his goal drought, which was fantastic. And we still have no bottle, so that's good as well. Right, where do we start? That first half, like a pack of rabid dogs, it should have been 4-0 or 5-0.
It could have been more than that. How about it? And you know, I already slated my girlfriend once for her football opinions in this episode, so I apologize, but I'm doing it a second time. At halftime, she was like, oh, 2-0, good job. And I said, it should be more. And she said, well, don't get greedy. And I said, I saw us go 2-0 up against Inter and lose 4-2. I will always be greedy. Well, it ended 2-2. And as soon as I scored the second one, I turned to her and she said, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even have to say anything. She just knew. But yeah, man, like a 2-0 lead is the most dangerous lead in football since we're going off cliches. And here's another example of why. But it should have been 5. It should have been 6. We had so many opportunities. And it wasn't even great saves by Merritt. It was us not taking the chances the way we should have. And that's okay when you get 2 in the first half. You're like, all right, you know, we're still pushing. Whatever, you miss a couple, you're never going to put them all away, right? But then it piled up. It was like, we're missing. And we still were dominating the game. Everything first half was fine outside of, obviously, Kalulu getting injured, which we should mention because the morning of the game, Kjaer also got injured. So now we're missing our starting choice center back in Chow, who's suspended. And then we're missing our second choice in Kalulu, and then our third choice in Kjaer. And now we only have our teenager who's never played before come on. And he looks scared. The commentators acknowledged it. We probably all acknowledge it. And he was at fault for Napoli's first goal, but he wasn't ready and there was nothing we could do about it. It's not even Pioli's fault he played. We didn't have a choice. But then later on when he gets injured again and now we have to play with 3 fullbacks, it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, guys. But
give us a break.
Anyway, well, and then we don't even mention Pulisic coming off at halftime because he supposedly got injured as well. I still, you know, it's easy to say in hindsight, keep him on. But when you're 2-0 up and one of your best players is saying, hey, my hamstring's hurting, and you know the backup's already out, and you only have Luka Romero, you say, you know what, let's just take you off, not risk it. I get Pioli's decision-making there. So I'm not even that mad at his subs, but it's like then you look at taking Giroud off, who's got 2 goals on a hat trick, is the only guy who's going forward and also defending. We know what he brings to the press. For Luka Jovic, who doesn't do anything, you know, his entire Milan career so far has been a big question mark. Why is he here? That's frustrating. You take off Leao, I get it. Leao had a horrible game. He's probably my flop for this match, especially with his massive miss when he could have given it to Luka Romero, who would have been one-on-one, you know. Instead, he tried to chip the keeper when he was fucking being triple defended. It was ridiculous. It was horrible decision-making. I have no problem with him coming off. But if you're going to take off Giroud, then you leave Leao on with Okafor because you know that they're deadly together. They have that connection. Leao's going to pass to Okafor before he's going to pass to Luka Romero. And you could say that's not a good thing. And I agree it isn't. He should be willing to pass to everyone. We saw the selflessness with Zaire, Emery, whatever, giving it to Mbappe when he had a better chance to himself. But we know that Leão and Okafor have their little bromance. They're going to play with each other. Whereas Luca Romero, the mindset probably in that moment from Leão is, it's 2-2. We need a goal. We don't know what Luca Romero can do in a one-on-one situation. Let me be the hero. And obviously, he wasn't the hero. He missed his shot. But that might be the thought process, whereas if it's his boy, you know, and Okafor, he'll be like, yeah, let me get him another goal. He's got two already. Not justifying it, but that's the only way I could see leaving Leão on and taking Giroud off. So, I don't know. Those substitutions kind of upset me. The rest of them, he was forced. He didn't have a choice. And again, substitutions killed our momentum. When Calabria, it was Giroud actually, post-game said, when they scored their first goal, we didn't know if we needed to attack or defend. That's ridiculous. You should always have a game plan for when you concede a goal, right? You should always know whether you're ahead or behind in that moment. You should always know what you need to do after you concede your first goal. Now, it was a bad decision from Pellegrino to try to head that ball, not because of where the ball was, but because he lowered his head and then ran towards it. You know, you telegraph it. So they see it and say, okay, yeah, you're going to head it. Let me just chip this over you. Easy. If he was there first and he didn't, like if he ran normal and then just hit it real quick, I think he actually could have got away with it and it would have been fine. But because he, you know, head down and ran like that. But again, he's a teenager who's never played. He was scary. Yeah. It was the highest caliber game he's ever going to play. This is the reigning champions. It is what it is there. It's frustrating. And then we got to blame Mike for the wall setup on the free kick. Well, it was actually given away by Luca Romero, another guy who shouldn't have played, another teenager who had never played at this high of a level. He looked great in preseason, but you know, that's preseason. This is a real match with real points on the line that really matter. He gave that away in a really shitty spot and it was stupid to do so. But then Mike setting up that second wall that completely blocked his own view of the kick and his corner. Oh, it was strange. You know, he probably thought he was going over the wall, but still, why would you impede your own view? It was a strange decision. Mike had like a 15 to 20 minute brain fart at one point where he was missing everything that was touching his hands. I don't know what happened there. I don't know. You guys want to take over? I'm just ranting here.
I enjoyed that. That was cathartic.
If only I had water.
I want to add a couple of things. I think, I mean, you touched on it, the substitutions. Look, we have lamented about Giroud since his first open play goal at the first game of the season, right? He's been a ghost since then. Today he wasn't. Today he was actually world-class. Yesterday, he was world-class. Hold up play, track him back. He was easily the best player on the pitch, bar none.
Mm-hmm.
He's still fit. He wanted to be there. We don't know how many games we've got left of Giroud. He's old. He could get injured. Why are you taking him off? We play Udinese on Saturday. Why are you taking him off? That baffled me. The Leão one, yeah, fair enough. Taking Giroud off is instantly like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, honestly, what are you doing? He's the only player that actually did something that game, at least from an attacking perspective. Incredibly frustrating. And I could tell that he was frustrated. We spoke about it on the chat yesterday and this morning. I know you mentioned it, Ollie, about it's different now. We're starting to see frustrations coming out, you know, between Leão and Giroud specifically. Leão I've got an issue with because I think he's starting to believe his own hype a little bit too much, and that's not good. He seems a little bit petulant. You know, he tracked back. I remember, I think there was a couple tackles, I think 30th minute, first half. I think it was Politano on the right-hand side. Leão came back and did a nice slide tackle and then ran back up the pitch. That was brilliant. But Leão doesn't do that all the game. He does it when it suits him. Mm. And why? Why does he do that? Where's this mentality coming from? That, you know?
There was one moment as well where he tracked Di Lorenzo back.
It was Di Lorenzo, was it? Yeah, that was it.
This, I think this was a different one, but he tracked him back and he sort of got square on with him, 5 yards apart, and then Di Lorenzo darts inside and Leão sort of half-assed puts a foot out to try and stop him and he goes past him. And he doesn't follow his man. He just stands there as in like, well, he's beaten me. And it's almost like it was a symbolic, like to make it look like he was there and he sort of tried a little bit. And then, you know, when you do something like that, and it's not like Napoli are the same beast this season, but they are still pretty good at moving the ball quickly. And it can very quickly become an overload. And then you start pointing the finger and saying, well, where was the help? Nobody's tracking the runners. And you've got a lead from the front when you play the way that we do, because we can so quickly be exposed. But yeah, I totally get the frustrations with Liao. I thought it was really, really poor. And we will come on to the substitution reactions thing as well. But there's positives.
I just want to say, at what point does Liao, as the player that we rely on the most, producing the goals, which he hasn't been doing the last sort of four or five games, when does he actually become a hindrance? Because he's very much becoming a hindrance at this point.
Now,
from my perspective, yeah. A hindrance.
I would agree. If we had Pulisic and Chukwueze free, I would be thinking about for that Udinese game. I don't know if we are going to. There's some rumours that Chukwueze might come back early. And I mean, obviously, Pulisic went off at halftime, so we need to see how he is. But I'd be thinking Puli on the left and Chuk on the right. And let's just try and do something with selfless players, players that are there to create rather than constantly make the wrong decision. He had a couple of tearing runs, as he always does. That's all he seems to be fucking good for at the moment, is getting to the byline as quickly as possible. And yeah, we spurn chances with cutbacks, which is frustrating. Ryan does another glaring miss in that first half to make it 3-0 after he'd not fed his man and took a shot, another bad decision. But you know, you still got to, it's like flipping a coin, just because it's been heads five times in a row doesn't mean it's going to be tails the next time. Just because previous cutbacks have failed doesn't mean you should be taking on a shot or trying to dink the keeper or whatever. You know, you've still got to make the right decision in that moment. And it applies to the whole team. We're just not doing it enough at the moment. But the positives are there. Giroud's goal drought ended. He could hardly miss with the two goals that he scored. However, he did show his aerial prowess, rose like a salmon for both of them. Pulisic, really, really good cross for that first goal. Absolute dime of a ball in. Made it really, really hard, for Giroud to miss. And he still tried his best, basically headed it at Mare, but it went through him. And then the second one, Calabria, again, deserves praise because that was a beautiful stand-up cross as well. And rose well, headed it in off the post, gave Mare no chance that time. And as mentioned, it was wave after wave at that point. The crowd had got on Napoli's back. It was a sellout crowd. Garcia's under pressure. The midfield was non-existent for Napoli, or when it was existent, they were giving the ball away to us. We had the chance to really kill them off at that point. And yet, going in at half-time, you said into 4-2 game. That was the exact one that I had in my head as well, thinking we might regret that, you know, not getting that third one. And this is where I suppose Garcia deserves a little bit of credit, because he changed the system, put Raspadori up front or playing just off Simeone. Politano obviously made a difference on the right-hand side, and he brought on Ostergaard as well, who seemed a bit more up for the physical battle. And it worked. You know, we were rocked in the... It only took them something like 16, 17 minutes until they were back level in the second half. And that Politano goal's a belter. He won't score many more like that, I don't think. And the Raspadori free kick is a belter as well, but it comes from naivety. It comes from individuals not doing their job. You just do your job and we will win this game, but you haven't, and therefore we've surrendered a really good position and a chance to end a massive week with a statement result. And now all the doubts are reopened. You've got players throwing tantrums and people, I mean, we've got, I think, 9 questions, and the 7 of them about, like, when's Pioli going? Who's, you know, that's just the way it is. And look, the nicest thing I can say after the second half, weighing it all up, is that it was an entertaining game and it was a good advert for Serie A. And I think we need more games like that in Serie A, where, not like the Juve, Milan-Juve game, where you've got a team there who clearly doesn't want it. That was two teams who were like, yeah, let's do it. Let's drop the gloves like a Western, just firing at each other. Let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And 2-2, you could say maybe a fair result. Maybe we wasted our chances, but it was exhausting. Like, it was just... It was tough to watch.
I thought, you know, if you're a neutral watching that, like, you're having a blast. Well, what a game. It was a lot of fun to watch, you know, and both the Napoli goals were fucking rockets, just incredible goals that even me, when the free kick went in, my first thought was not, oh shit, it's 2-2. I said, what a fucking free kick. Like, holy shit. And then I realized, oh no, this is worst case scenario. but it took me a little bit, but I was like, God damn, what a goal. But you know, as much as I was just ranting about my frustrations and angers towards this game, positives to take away. Calabria looked incredible. The one game a year you could guarantee he'll always show up for is against Kvaratskhelia. He just, for whatever reason, knows how to shut this dude down. And you saw it. The first one-on-one they had with each other, Kvara was doing his little cutback thing, and Calabria just held firm, didn't budge, and then just picked his point, toe in, intercepted the ball, and he didn't even try to like recover the ball because he didn't grab it. He just kicked it out for someone else to get it. But you see him go like, you know, like a real little celebration. He's happy. He's like, let's go. And that was something that we got laughed at on Twitter, and we as in Milan fans or Milan players, because someone like, maybe it was Di Lorenzo in a different game, they're saying, we need more guys like this who are willing to celebrate just winning their tackles. And I agree, you know, because it means like, this is what I care about, is every little thing I do needs to be correct. I think everything Calabria did was correct. He got beat by Kvara one time, and it ultimately was for nothing, you know, nothing came of it. But other than that, I mean, A, that assist, that cross, the curve on that reminded me of Beckham. I mean, it was one of the best crosses I've ever seen. As much as I want to say Pulisic's cross was the best cross, this Calabria one was like next level. And I have talked so much shit about Calabria in my life, you know. But it was the game for him. This is where he's like, okay, that's Capitano, you know, like that. Calabria, great job. Hats off to you. Musa, fantastic as well. He had a yellow card, which I didn't think was even a fair yellow card, but everything else he did, fantastic. Again, I thought he was dangerous, always making good plays. Going back to Calabria, because I'm actually moving to Pulisic here, but their partnership is just so dynamic. They always expect the give and go. And you know why? It's because they're both selfless players. They're always looking for that pass. Pulisic is always going to make the pass because every time he wants a ball, he's doing a give and go. So he knows when someone gives him the ball and they keep running, it's a give and go. Let's do this shit. You understand how it works. And so they're working out so well. And that's what led to both of the crosses, which led to both of the goals. When Pulisic came off at halftime, obviously it was for an injury. You know, I'm not even attacking Pioli for that. That was when I was like, okay, the tempo's going to decrease. It's going to slow down. Luca Romero doesn't play the same way Pulisic does, which is okay. You want your substitution players to have a different game so that something new is coming to the pitch that could confuse defenders and you could grow from it. But he also doesn't have that partnership with Calabria. And Calabria only plays one way. So when he doesn't have Pulisic there, he's going to keep trying to do what he does, and it's not going to work out because Luka Romero's not going to give him these through balls. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that's the way that they play their game, you know? We really missed a guy like Chukwueze in this moment when Pulisic had to come off. Looking at the rest of them, I'm just trying to go down the list here. I think everyone actually had a really good game. Drew was world class. Leao didn't. Leao and Reinders again missed open chances. There was a moment where I thought Orsato had a really bad call where he called a foul on Leao, who went up for a header when it was a 2-on-1. I don't remember who the other runner was with Leao, but I mean, that could have been a goal. We don't know what would have happened, but it probably would have been. Let's be real. And Pulisic probably could have scored if Reinders made a pass to him in the first half. And then, of course, he took that stupid shot that later on that went well high. Pellegrino had a shot on target, a header. You know, for as much as we're saying he had a rough game, he still had a shot on target, which is crazy. Looking at the table, looking at the season, we're 10 games played. We've played everyone. Everyone at the top. And we've lost, or we've dropped points in three games against first, second, and fourth. We're in third. That's not a bad place to be, especially when you dive into the games. We dominated this one, and injuries were the story here that threw this game away. The Juventus game, our early red card and a deflected shot, wonder goal from 40 yards out, was the story of that game. They didn't beat us either. You know, on another day, that's an extra 4 points, which puts us firmly in second, or tied on first with Inter. Inter's the only team that actually really beat us this season and did it convincingly. PSG as well, but I'm just talking league. when you look at it going forward, we're in such a good spot, guys. They have to fight each other now. Now they get to go to war, and they have to drop points. They can't keep winning every game.
Have you seen Inter's next five away games?
No,
they play Atalanta away, Juve, Napoli, Lazio in the next five away games. That's yes.
We're top.
And then obviously they've got Champions League games.
I love that confidence.
It's just the way it's going to go. Like, you could say we fumble against lower table sides in the past historically, which is true. But look at the teams we played this season. Everyone who wasn't one of those top three teams, we've beat every single one of them. Even when it got tough, we pulled it out against Genoa. The cost was high, a couple red cards, but we pulled it out. Last season, we had a bad run in 2 months, but we were putting it away against these small sides. The Scudetto winning season, we won our final six against weaker sides to pull away a trophy. Like, yes, we have collapsed against smaller sides and we still struggle against low blocks, but we're finding a way this season and last season and the season prior. So I'm not as worried about that as I would have been, you know, say when Gattuso was in charge and we drew to Benevento with a Brignoli header, you know, like that shit's not happening to us anymore. Fingers crossed. Hopefully not.
And then lost at home to him.
Right.
Yeah.
Great reference. I do agree, but I also disagree a little bit.
That's fine.
I agree about Inter because I think we're on the same wavelength compared to Ollie. I think they're incredibly overrated and they will be found out at some point this season. I just hope it's soon.
You're right.
They're just so one-dimensional. They're insanely good at that one dimension, but that's all they're good at. And they will get found out, but that's another discussion. I agree. You know, when you look at it, bird's eye view, yeah, the three games we lost were all drop points. They were good teams, blah, 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 blah. But we are in a really delicate position now with the injuries. And I think that's a pertinent point because that's completely relevant now. We are not in the habit of winning games. We're in the habit of playing really well, squandering our chances, and then not being able to catch up. And that's something that really worries me because, yeah, Udinese, a game that we should be winning. We've had trouble against them in the past, recent as well, when we've been good. What happens if we drop points in that game as well? Again, from a table perspective, maybe not the end of the world. But football is all about momentum. And if you keep doing that and it gets to December, then we will be in a sticky situation. And that's more than likely going to happen, in a sense, because of now the injury crisis that we're now facing. So that's where I disagree with you. But I agree from a bird's eye view. It's not crisis yet, but I don't think the outlook looks as positive as you are being, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. Udinese, they haven't won a game this season. You know, they've...
I don't think we'll lose, but we need to win games.
They're kind of our bogey side. We're going to win this game, though. But yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah. We should probably round off Napoli, and then we'll go into Udinese. One thing before we do tops and flops... any problems with the reactions that Giroud and Liao showed to being subbed off? And does those two reactions, combined with what Calabria said after the PSG game about please don't bother showing up if you don't think that we can win things, and Pioli saying no, he was wrong to say that, everybody shows up to training, there's like a bit of a misunderstanding with the comments. Are we starting to just see behind the dressing room door a little bit now? Is it becoming quite public that, I don't want to say that Pioli's not commanding respect, but maybe dissent when it's in the view of the cameras and he's being beamed to millions around the world is not a good look. So what do we make of it?
Go ahead.
Obviously, it's not great. I want to preface one thing by saying, look, I would personally never take public spats with much context. I mean, look at Haaland and Pep plays up to the camera. He is what it is. I don't really think about that. In isolation, Giroud, I've got no problem with his reaction. I think his reaction is purely just frustration. He was playing well. He had two goals. He's a really experienced football player. And at the end, he even said, look, I lost my head. After 5 minutes, I was fine. No problem. I completely get that. You're playing well, you're taking out the game. He's got no reason to not be playing the full 90, in my opinion. Leao, on the other hand, I do have an issue with how he approached it. I didn't like how he walked around. He looked quite petulant. He was pushing his teammates away, like trying to calm down, just to have a quick word with Pioli, and then he just walked off. He deserved to be taken off. I have an issue with that. But does it open the curtains to what's going on? I don't know. I don't think Pioli's fully had everyone's respect. if we look back to the Scudetto season, we wouldn't have won it if it wasn't for Zlatan. We know Zlatan was the boss in the dressing room. So I don't think it's like, oh, I think, you know, the dressing room's lost. I just don't think it was 100% there to start off with just Pioli anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually agree with, honestly, all of that. I think Liao's reaction was not good. I understand why he had the reaction. When you are the star player, you don't look back and say, I had a poor game. You know, I deserve to be subbed off. In the moment when it's 2-2, with, you know, I think 10 minutes left to play, something like that, you're thinking, why the fuck am I coming off? I'm that guy, you know? Well, you weren't today. And in the heat of the moment, you're not going to recognize that. So I understand the reaction, but it doesn't make it okay. As for Giroud's reaction, from what I saw, he didn't go to Pioli. He didn't, you know, push away his teammates or anything. He just sat on the water cooler and put his head down and was frustrated and in silence. And that shows a lot more maturity. And yes, we're still talking about a 37-year-old who was quite literally pouting on a water cooler.
Literally performative. Yeah. But yeah. I know what you mean.
It is. You know, it's like, all right, I have all this anger and it's justified. All the fans recognize it's justified. Probably all the players do too. Like, this guy's on a hat trick. He's the only one who's gotten a goal this game. Why would we take him out for a guy, Luka Jovic, who barely even travels because he, you know, he's got muscle fatigue when he doesn't play? Like, it's that's to me is insane. But I don't know. I think it showed a desire to win. And Giroud's post-match comment, something about like, we had to win this game. This was the Scudetto. You know, I fully understand that mentality as someone who has won it in the past, being Giroud, obviously not me. At 37 years old, he knows he's not going to have many other. Yeah, I know. I just said as someone who's won it, and I was like, oh, okay. But for Giroud, as someone who has won it, he's at the end of his career, and he knows that he's not going to have many more title-winning opportunities left. He knows the importance of it. He is that leader, and he was the one who was pushing for it and actually did it. So I don't know. I think it was unfair to take him off. Liao, he's a flop this match. He deserved to come off. I also understand his mentality of the reaction, but it was wrong to do publicly. You say something to him after if you disagree, and then Pioli could explain it to you. Because he did go up to Pioli, but he did it in a public way. And like you said, Lorenzo, he pushed off Adley, who tried to just like, hey, you know, give him a hug, whatever. And he went up to Pioli like, what are you doing? And Pioli went up to him and said, what do you expect me to do? You know, and that looks bad, but good on Pioli for sticking to his guns because he was correct. So I don't know. That was frustrating. What was the other? There was another part of that question.
It was just the Calabria comments where he said after the PSG game. I can't remember what his exact words were, to be honest, but he just sort of said something along the lines of, those who don't believe in this shouldn't bother coming to training and stuff. And then Pioli came out and said, no, he spoke out of place there. Everyone in the squad shows up to training and he's giving everything, you know. They apparently had a clarification afterwards where Pioli said, where Calabria said, this is what I meant, and it was all ironed out and everything. That's fine, but I just think Calabria can sometimes be quite flippant in the media, like, this isn't good enough kind of thing. You do want that. You want the captain to face up. But I think then for the head coach to come out immediately after, like, straight after that interview and say, no, he was wrong there, it's just like, oh, can we not? We've just lost.
Yeah, we got to be on the same page. Yeah. Pierre did that last year too, when he's like, oh, yeah, we keep conceding shit goals. Yeah. And Pioli's like, oh, it is what it is. I actually think Calabria, good on him for saying that, because you're right. As captain, I want you to own up to it. And you only want people who want to be there, you know? And if someone, to me, that says someone in the locker room said, like, basically what we said, oh, it's PSG, what are we going to do? Well, then go play for a club that's okay with being mediocre, because Milan's not, you know? And as the captain, that is your place to say, we are Milan. We are supposed to win every single game. So I get that. I don't have an issue with it.
Yeah, I hope that when Liao came around, having shoved everyone aside and said to Pioli, why? Pioli just turned to him and went, because you were fucking shit, lad. Yes. And that's what I hope he said.
Yeah.
Just fucking sit down.
You see you before?
And the cheek of that, man. Tops, flops, quick fire.
Calabria top, Liao flop.
Nice. Agreed.
Yeah, I would like to collaborate, but I gave him his roses in the PSG game. So yeah, Giroud for me. I think he was larking back to his, you know, first few years. Brilliant player and brilliant game he had.
Yeah, actually, I agree. Giroud, because I slate him so much and I say it's like playing with 10 players, blah, blah, blah. He scored those two goals. It's amazing what a bit of confidence does. His hold-up play turned back to peak like Arsenal days. It was great to see. Long may that continue. Let's move on. Let's do Udinese preview. So as AJ rightly points out, Udinese are winless this season. They have drawn 7 of their 10 games. They have scored 6 goals in 10 games and have only let in 14, I say only. They started the season with a 3-0 loss to Juve, and also in there is a 2-0 loss to Fiorentina and a 4-1 loss to Napoli. So essentially, they've lost to the teams that they should have done. But the rest of the results, 1-1, 0-0, 0-0, 2-2, 0-0, 1-1, they are boring as fuck, basically. Under, I guess...
And well, Sotil got sacked.
Sotil got sacked, and it's Gabriele Cioffi, who was the head coach at Hellas Verona last. But they've got some... I'm not going to say they've got like a plethora of attacking talent in that side, but like Delefeu, success has looked okay at this level. Lazar Samardzic stayed, despite all the links with him leaving during the summer. They signed Florian Thauvin as well, who has actually looked all right. Yeah.
What, winger?
Well, Delefeu is not going to play. He's been injured all season.
Yeah, he's out, yeah.
Yeah, they don't even know when he's coming back.
Yeah.
Samardzic went good, you know, but I'm not worried about this game. No. And I know famous last words, but...
It will be a boring game, though, as you said.
No, I'm not. Yeah, but I think...
It's going to be a boring game.
After what happened in Genoa, I'm cautious, but I think they're riding the crest of a wave a little bit more than Udinese. I am less worried about playing such obvious low-block teams now because I think we will find a way with the new system and with having midfield runners into the box. Like when Torino came first home game of the season, thinking, okay, this is going to be a test because Juric teams defend and they defend well and organised and we put 4 past them. I hope it's the same kind of thing where we get a goal in the first half and all of a sudden it's like, what do Udinese have for us? They have nothing. They can't score goals. It is a banana skin though, this. I think this little skid that we're on, if we can call it that, would be opened up into a crisis if we were to lose this game or potentially even drop points. So it is massively important that we respond and that we get 3 points in this because it puts the pressure on the others as well. Now that we've got these first 10 out the way, we need to kind of be flawless for the next, until our next tough game. And really put the pressure on Inter and Juve up until Christmas because Inter have these games where they might slip up. They didn't look great against Roma yesterday. Nearly dropped points at home against a pretty bad Roma side. The tougher tests are to come for them. We'll see what they're made of. But it's up to us to just keep chasing them and keep putting the pressure on them. And yeah, the thing with team news for this one is we don't really know what the crack is with the injuries. Hope Loftus-Cheek is back. Got to presume that the back four is going to be Calabria, Chow, Tomori, and Teo because Kier's injured. Pellegrino's now injured with a badly sprained ankle. And Kalulu, we'll see. Apparently, it's a bad bruise. I would definitely start Loftus-Cheek if he's fit, which he is meant to be. This is meant to be the game that he comes back for. Touch wood, touching everything. And then I'm playing Adli at the base of the midfield. Let's do it. Let's have a bit of creativity. We're going to need that kind of passing range and variety that Krunic doesn't have to break down a team that sits deep. I might give Tijani a little seat on the bench since he's turned into Çalhanoğlu in the last few games. Our version of Çalhanoğlu. And then the front three, we don't know, like who's knackered. Probably start Okafor maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I like your lineup. I don't think that's who we're going to get. I think it's going to be the exact same midfield of Tijani, Krunic, and Musa.
I swear if I see Krunic, I swear to God.
Yeah. Actually, if Loftus-Cheek is back, I bet what's crazy is the only person who's getting benched is Musa, who's the only one who shouldn't be. Pioli does Pioli things. I don't know who it's going to happen with Pulisic. I mean, are we going to risk him for this game? Or are we going to say, Luka, you get your start and hope for the best? You know, if Pulisic's like 60%, 50%, do you leave him on the bench and hope? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's risky.
Especially with PSG the next midweek.
Well, I was going to say there's no midweek game this week, so at least we get a week off. But yeah, I'm not too sure about the lineup, but I think we're going to get the job done. And I'm just looking around it. Like you said, Inter play Atalanta next. Juventus play Fiorentina next, who likely could jump Napoli into the top four today, actually. They play Lazio or later today. And then Napoli play Salernitana, and you look at all their wins, and it's been literally the bottom five teams if they win against Salernitana. So that tells you about them. I really think we're in a good spot here, boys. I think we're going to, you know, in a 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks maybe, we might be back on top.
Bloody hell, so.
Yeah. I hope so. I think we win this game. Just two things. I better not see Krunic. We will.
We will.
Best believe Giroud better be playing from the first bloody minute, because otherwise, what's the point of taking him off against Napoli? He better be there starting against Udinese. Otherwise, what is the point? I don't want to see Okafor unless he's on the right. I don't care. I want Giroud starting.
You want him on the right?
You want him on the right?
I need him somewhere, but I need Giroud
on the left. Tell Leao that he needs to spend a little bit of time out. That would be mental.
It would be weird. The lineup's going to be funny, and I think it will give us a little bit more clarity to what Pioli's thinking. I mean, who knows really what that man's thinking? But yeah, like you guys, I feel confident just because of how average Udinese have been, how much we need to win. But yeah, lineup-wise, I've got no clue. I mean, neither of us really do we? We don't know what the injury situation. And
I'm gonna say that we win this one 2-0. I'd like to think that we rout them, but the fact that they haven't had an awful defensive record this season suggests that they do at least have a degree of organisation. Yeah. I'll say 2-0, but really the key for this one is a first half goal, because otherwise the nerves will grow. Mm-hmm. They will sit deeper and we will find it harder. Let's put a team to the side.
It's at home, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, at home.
Yeah.
I think we'll beat them.
I'll go 3-1 just to have some fun.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Big fun.
That's a lot of goals. We don't score that many goals.
I know. We're not going to pressure them like we did Napoli. We get up for the Napoli game a lot more than any other game for whatever reason. But yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I think we'll be good. It depends on who's playing, though, right?
Yeah.
We'll see. Mm-hmm. Let's do a couple of listener questions. We got quite a few of them, obviously, about Pioli. When should he be sacked? Who should replace him? Obviously, thank you for sending the questions in, but we do kind of talk about this most weeks, and there's a couple of other interesting ones that I wanted to mention. Two of them came from Frankie Scarpino. He says, I guess this is more of a statement than a question, feeling like we should cash in on Teo doesn't fit the system and hasn't improved defensively.
That's interesting. I think he's going anyway. I think he's going anyway. I think PSG is going to come in for him pretty soon.
Oh my god, they'd have like three world class left backs.
No joke. I think he's going. I think he is actually on his way out within the next 18 months. Is my theory anyway. So yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if he leaves. I don't want him to. I think the issue right now is there's no competition. Obviously, we're going for Juan Miranda from Betis. We might get him in January, but we're definitely going to get him for free over the summer. I don't know if that's what we need. If you look at their like radar graphs or whatever, their skill sets are totally different. Teo's is almost entirely offensive, and Miranda's is very defensive, which is kind of what we're lacking right there. And I think that's really going to help that left side, which we need. But then it says, what happens with Leao? Because obviously him and Teo have their overlapping, just like Calabria and Pulisic do. It's interesting. I wouldn't be mad if he was sold. I think he's I think he's replaceable, and he's a good amount of money. But I don't know if I want to see it yet. I'm literally wearing a Teo jersey, and that wasn't planned. Yeah. It just happened to be the one I grabbed off the wall. But
based on the shirt buying look of the Sempre Milan chat, anyone whose name's on the back is going pretty quickly. So I think we're
This is nameless. I've gone with the nameless. So that's
That one with a gambling addict on it. So I didn't wear that one.
I've got another one as well. I think obviously with everything, it depends on the offers that come in, right? So Milan might value Theo as an 80 to 100 million euro player based on the start of the season that he's had. And we know that his level is higher than what he's shown so far. But is any team around Europe, you say PSG, obviously they've got money to burn, but I think they're kind of covered in that position unless they were to sell somebody. You know, I don't know how that'll work out. But is anybody coming in to pay that amount of money? I think fullback in football is a shit position. I think there's been an absence of elite level fullbacks for years. And we talked about Theo and we've bragged about having the best left back in the world for him to dip in form this season. He's just not been as good. People are talking about sort of the formation hindering him and Pioli telling him not to go inverted as much and things like that. I don't see how the formation hinders him. We've got extra midfield cover, which means he should have even more license to go forward. He was looking good when inverting, but I think we've just reined it in a bit since that Derby defeat and since the struggles that we had defensively in the first part of the season. But it's on him as much as anything, you know, to get back into form. If it takes a goal, he can be a streaky player, can Theo. Sometimes it takes a goal. Sometimes it takes an altercation. Like, it takes him getting really fired up against someone to get going again. We know what he's capable of. In terms of a sale, yeah, it depends on the offers that come in, because we'll only sell him for what we deem fair value, because he renewed his contract last year until 2026. If we got fair value, and again, I'm probably saying that's around about the more on the 60-70 side than the 80 to 100. I'm probably taking it. And I don't think this Juan Miranda stuff, which has been confirmed by all the reliable sources, I don't think it's a coincidence. This guy is not coming to be a backup for 5 years. He's just not. He's a starter at Betis, which is his home club now. And he got into the senior Spain squad recently. So he's young and he's sort of an upcoming left back. It isn't a smart career move for him to come and be a backup. Maybe something's moving on that front. Obviously, it would appear to be a big downgrade at the moment, but I just think that might be a little hint, a little sign. We shall see. Frankie also asks, what's a bigger need in January, a centre-back or a striker?
Both. I don't think you can pick between the two.
I'm going to pick centre-back, actually. Yeah. I just think, looking at this last game alone, where we've rotated a center back suspension for each of the big games, and then you have Kier, who's on his last legs, right? Like, he's at the end of his career, getting injured before each game. Then you have Kalulu, who can't stay fit, and your only other option is Pellegrino, who also can't stay fit. Like, we need a striker a center back that's going to give us four mid to lower 20-year-old center backs that are of good caliber that can rotate and start. You know, not saying Tomori's not going to always be the guy, and you don't want to have him rotating at the different partner each time, but have like a little round robin going with Chao, Kalulu, Tomori, and Mr. X, whoever it may be. But I think that's far more important than the striker right now, simply because we're still getting goals, and I think Okafor can become a really good striker if he gets more time. And Giroud just showed that he's still not done, right? And obviously, Liao's got four or five goals. He's got three. He's got three goals, three assists. Pulisic's got four goals, three assists now. We're creating chances, creating goals from the front three. And right now, our issue is that we keep letting in silly ones. So I would rather stop the bleeding than buy another gun, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah, I think centre back, just because I don't think we can get, unless we somehow done a pre-contract agreement with David that potentially is a thing, whatever. You just can't afford a decent striker in January, whereas you can get a realistically useful defensive option in January that we could afford of, you know, between the 8 and 15 million that we probably have to play with. Yeah, I think striker is actually a bigger issue because we have got defenders. We've just been fucked by injuries. But you can't get, like I said, a good striker in January. So for that reason, I would agree with you. Yeah, centre back, definitely.
Yeah, agree with all of that. I think there is an obvious hole in the centre back department at the moment. And I know what you mean about trying to add that fourth piece to make sure we've got a young core moving forward. I think Kier is obviously the veteran and the most experienced of that entire defensive department. He's no longer physically reliable. We've known this for a long time. I do think there could be something to be said for signing someone who's got, you know, Champions League, big game experience, 28, 30 range, someone who's still got a few years ahead of them to come in and kind of help shepherd, because we've seen with Chow and even Tomori, who's 25 now, they can still make the wrong decisions, and they are decisions that lead to goals, you know. They can still make fatal errors. I think sometimes if you have that calmer, more experienced head, they can just, you know, take charge of the ship a little bit better. So I would look into signing somebody. It'd have to be a low-cost deal. I don't think we're going to go out and spend 30, 40 million, especially on a centre-back in January. But there could be something in there, you know, to bring another leader into the dressing room. But easier said than done, obviously, because they tend to come with high wages and whatnot. The striker is definitely the more important signing. It's imperative we get that right. And because I think of the investment that's going to take, it needs to be delayed until the summer. As Lorenzo said, you don't get great value for strikers in January. I'm not the Jonathan David stuff isn't moving me at the moment. I'm fully team Santiago Jimenez. I'd love to sign him from Feyenoord. He could be our Lautaro, in my opinion. Scrappy little fucker who finishes, you know, from anywhere. I would love us to sign, but it looks like his price might already be out of reach. Will be interesting to see who we go for. Sesko's agent. Yeah. Sesko's agent said today that he talked to us in the past and in the future. Who knows? Milan are a big club. So, you know, there'll be all kinds of rumours between now and then, but we have to get that right because we probably need two, to be honest. We'll see what comes of Okafor's position, but obviously he came on the left again yesterday, and I think maybe that's where we see him, especially if we were to, like, sell Liao or whatever. But with Giroud being 37, his contract up at the end of the season, I wouldn't be surprised if we invest in a younger profile and then still sign like Taremi on a free, you know, just so we've got a 1-2 punch at centre forward rather than bringing on Jovic, who is this season's Pietro Pellegrini. Yeah, right. I've seen the time. I'm wrapping it up here. Thank you to everybody who submitted questions. Please let us know your thoughts on everything, the games that we've played, Pioli's management, the reaction of the subs, everything. In the comments, really appreciate the engagement and any feedback that you give us. Again, go check us out on Substack for all the bonus content. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I'll go to AJ and then Lorenzo can do his final sign off until the Christmas quiz.
Yeah, it's always fun. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I'll be back on your screens and ear holes soon enough, Christmas. But yeah, absolute pleasure. Let's hope you guys have got a nice victory to review and I can listen to on Sunday.
And best of luck in the new role as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. We'll be good.
As Milan's centre-back. yeah, that's thank it, you for guys. Watching. Thanks for watching, everyone, and listening. And we will be back in a week's time.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio...